Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
I'm Dr. Redmond.
And, oh, did we watch two episodes, which were very, very confusing episodes. I know I oversold last week that, you know, how good the vampire episode was. Oh. It's not a great episode.
Yeah, you had a little time to think about it,
I did.
Right?
Well, no, and I in my defense, I did say I would be apologizing for these opinions later. but, you know, there was a rare bright spot in an otherwise dire season, and is there a better example of that season's direness than these couple of episodes?
Oh, my God.
So I mean, let's get right to it.
They're so bad.
I know.
So it was like,
I know.
Say what? Now, mind you, I did like the second one. I mean, because we got to see Damon, or Stephen Walker or whatever, yeah, playing the trombone.
Yeah, that was fun.
And
but as an episode, oh my God. All right, so let's get to it.
True North. When three decomposing bodies are found, I'm thinking about that stupid clock. Anyway, yeah. Three decomposing bodies are found tied to wooden stakes. This is not funny. I'm sorry, guys. Outside Tucson, Arizona.
And yet she can't stop laughing.
She can't stop laughing.
Well, no, because you're thinking about Luke's scene with the sundial.
I know.
One of the dumbest things. I know.
Because we saw it.
I know, right? We'll get there. We'll get there. Finish the synopsis and we'll get there, okay?
And there aren't four.
No, I know. I know. Okay? I know.
I tell you, what a way to greet me this morning. The BAU determines the victims are pawns in a stupid freak.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, even this part was stupid. Meanwhile, Lewis convinces Reed to undergo a cognitive interview.
Yeah. All right. So, yes. Tara comes and gives the cognitive interview to Reed. He thinks he might have done it. Then he comes to the conclusion that a woman did it, which makes them think a woman is working with Scratch. But we, of course, know it's Aubrey Plaza because we've already seen all the episodes. Who's working with Joe Mantegna's daughter. But we'll get to that in the second episode. But that is what he remembers this week.
It's not Aubrey. It's Gia Mantegna.
Yeah, Joe Montana's daughter. Joe Mantegna's
Why
daughter.
Why did you say Aubrey Plaza?
Yeah, but that's who the mastermind is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But we don't know that yet.
I just said because we've all seen the whole season before. No, we don't officially know that yet, but come on. All right, but the point is, it's a good amount of fun. Nobody's complaining, except till when we get there. Seriously, though, this episode is so frustrating.
It's so funny. I mean, I just couldn't.
You can't take it seriously.
You can't take any of it seriously. I felt so sorry for those people who were dead. But I'm going, here's my first complaint.
Yeah.
Okay, they got three people. They figure out, okay, that they're all. So, and that, I mean, and I will even give them until they find out that they were all winners in a science fair.
They weren't. Why? Only one of them was winner in a science fair. The other three were just regular. What do you call it? The other three were just regular scholarship people, and only the fourth one was the science fair.
No.
They were all in the same science fair?
Not all in the, that's the point. They weren't all in the same science fair, but it is a science fair scholarship by that company.
Yes. But that's only related to the one he lost and the slacker won. The other three were just scholarship students. Who didn't win the science fair?
Oh, no, that's not how I read it.
Okay, I could be wrong.
I read it that every year they have this science fair and they give out this scholarship.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there was only one scholarship and the other four students.
Shush!
What?
Just let me finish.
Go!
Okay, so because they didn't all graduate at the same time. They just made it in the newspapers, right? So they didn't, there was once, so the way I read it, okay, and you might not read it this way, and God only knows with this episode how you're going to read it. But I was reading it that once they did the science thing, that these were four separate winners of in four different years. Okay, of science fairs.
I mean, and that's possible.
Okay, just a moment. That company gave it out. And therefore, I assumed that it was he lost the science fair the first time because he's killing all of them, right? Yeah. So it was the first one. So you have to go back to the first one and say, okay, who lost to the first one?
Okay.
And then you find this guy. That's how I read it.
Okay. That is, and I understand why you read it that way, but I would make one counterpoint, right? Okay. And my one counterpoint is that within the episode, we find out that he only lost the skull. Like all of the other people were people who had just come back from university and, you know, local people made good, right? They were all recently back from university, suggesting since university takes 3 years that they had all been at university at the same time. That's why I thought that. And B, he specifically has references when he's kidnapped the woman in charge of judging. They specifically reference the fact that he lost the science fair thing 3 years ago, meaning that like there hasn't been time for other people to win that science fair afterwards and fully go to university and then come home.
Oh, no. Because no. I you see, he lost it 3 years ago, and that's, yeah. And so that was the first one. But these people could have each won a science fair afterwards.
No, it couldn't be afterwards because they're coming home.
No, but they're not necessarily. Yeah, I know it sort of implies that they're coming home because they finally graduated. I'm not sure
it flat out says that they're all people who went off, got a, you know, kids who went off, made good, and then came back to town after going to university. It says that at the start of the episode. Full stop. And they had all been mentioned.
Does it say that they had finished university?
Yes. Yeah. They weren't just people who were visiting on break. And the last guy, and that's why they're confused at first, didn't finish university. He just dropped out.
Well, no, he failed.
Yeah, well, flunked out, dropped out. It doesn't matter.
Well, it does.
But anyway, continue. But the point is, we're specifically told that they're all coming back, and because it's 3 years ago, because his example was 3 years ago, that means these people can't have gotten it in the subsequent years. That's why I think the rest of them were unrelated scholarship kids who he was jealous of because he saw them in the newspaper.
This is a tiny little town.
Yeah.
Okay. How are there four...
That many?
$50,000 to $60,000 a year scholarship.
Available. I can't explain to you how so many scholarships wound up in this one town.
And that, they're paying that a year, so you're talking about...
I know.
Right?
It's a couple hundred thousand. It's a huge amount of money. Yeah.
$250,000.
Well, we don't actually know that. Some of them might have gone to state schools. Like, some of them might have gone to state schools, and it was only a scholarship to, like, the big school at the other end of the state that only costs $6,000 a year.
The guy who flunked out, his tuition was over
$50,000. Oh, I know. No, absolutely. But I'm just saying we don't know the details of the rest of their scholarships.
Yeah, the other one was over $40,000.
Yeah, and then there were another two that we don't have any information about. But so I'm saying it is, you're right, it is implausible, but I don't think they wrote the show that carefully. I honestly just don't think that they wrote the episode that carefully. As we're about to it's weird that this is our main source of debate in the episode. But well, I mean, you're right, it's completely unclear why he's targeting these people. No. I don't understand why he wouldn't first kill the specific guy he was mad at, the guy who won the... Like, why is he saving that guy for last?
Yeah, I don't understand that either.
Yeah, that's the part that really baffles me.
That doesn't make any sense to me, because that's the guy he lost the scholarship to, and the guy was a very poor student.
Yeah, the guy was a bum.
Did this bizarre thing.
Yeah, and he happened to win the scholarship.
And he happened to win, which tells me something about the
judges.
Yeah, about the judge.
No, I mean, he probably didn't deserve to win the scholarship. And I understand, like, we can relate to that guy's rage. Why is he killing the other people? And if he still had the rage and wanted to take it out on other scholarship people who got out and afterwards, that's great. But why is he not killing the target of his anger first?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like he was, you know, saving the best for last.
For last or anything like that. No. Like, the one he was saving to show off to his mother is the judge. That's the one he wanted to do something special with.
Yeah, but the other thing is that he's also using, oh, I don't know. Oh, God only knows. I mean, they come up with these theories and I'm going, well, that doesn't seem to be too plausible.
I would say is, do you know why you lost? People don't want to see a science fair project about torturing animals. Oh, but it's a more humane shock collar. It's still a project about torturing animals. And one of the strangest things in the episode is they're like, he's got shock collars on all of them, but they don't have, you know, the skin damage associated with shock collars. They must just be for show. And I'm like, wait, are you trying to tell me that you think a guy went to the trouble of strapping shock collars to people who he hated and was killing, but didn't bother shocking them with them? Don't you find that fairly implausible?
Well, the whole thing. Yes.
All right, but yes, but let's
get to the one that was so stupid.
I know. All right. So it's important to understand, and I've got video, screenshots of this up on Vargelon.com if you want to see video evidence of this, visual evidence of this. So at the beginning of the episode, we are shown that there is a line of three stakes next to one another, and all of the people are facing, as we are told, true north.
True north.
Right? And then directly in front of directly in front of them, is a boulder where the person sat to watch that person die.
Exactly.
Directly in front. So they're facing north. So it is directly north of them and they are facing south. And then halfway through the episode, makes a diorama suggesting that there had been only one stake and three different boulders arranged. The fourth was at the new crime scene. But the point is that the boulders had been arranged in a arc around. Mimicking a sundial.
And you're sitting there going,
that is not what happened.
We just saw this.
We
directly
just
in
saw
front.
It.
Facing, it's a line that's true north. Oh. You said they're facing south. They're not. They're facing north.
No. He's facing north to look at them. Facing south to look at them. They're facing north.
You weren't clear about that.
No,
yes,
I was not.
The murderer is facing south.
He's looking south. They're facing south. But yeah, we just saw that it was a straight line of posts and each one had a boulder directly in front of it. We know for a fact that this was not making a clock face.
This was not a Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Well, plus, and as I said, how can he figure out there are four? No, because he puts in four stones.
Well, no, because then they've had the fourth victim.
I know they've had the fourth victim, but the fourth victim is someplace else.
I agree with you. I know, it's insane. But it's completely irrelevant because to start with, there were three different stakes in the first place.
I know.
So it's not even relevant.
I know. It was the bizarrest thing.
No, I mean, it's one of the craziest things you've seen happen. And I swear to God, this is a scene in which, like in the script, he had an idea. And I guess they were in such a rush because it's the end of the season and they're definitely behind on time and out of money. And, like, the production people didn't understand it at all, and they maybe, like, built the wrong prop. And everyone just said, oh, screw it, let's just hope nobody notices.
Well, but I mean, this was one of those things. Like sometimes I have, you know, you have to think a little while, but this one was bizarre.
It's and right besides, in your face.
Those yeah. weren't rocks. You know, yeah. they were Star Trek rocks.
I know.
Right? So once they noticed they were in a, here, I will, let me finish this statement. Once Please. They noticed they were in a straight line, all they had to do was pick them up and put them sort of so that they would be in a semicircle.
I know.
If that's what they wanted to do. But remember, Joe Mantegna directed this episode.
And if there's one thing we know about Joe Mantegna's directorial style, it's that his directorial style is he wants to be home by 5 p.m. And that is his style.
And Bruce Zimmerman wrote it.
Well, no, and the thing is, when she says, by the way, just for the record, in case you're not familiar with the term, when she says Star Trek rocks, she's referring to giant paper mache boulders. How on Star Trek, they used to have this thing where, especially I think in the episode Galileo 7, where there's like giant Yetis throwing boulders at them, and they're quite obviously paper mache things that weigh nothing.
Oh, yeah. And then, so, yeah, then
and
go
as you
and
said, it would not have been. Yeah, yeah, it would not. Oh, yeah. Or the Horta. Perfect.
The Horta episode.
Right? Yeah, where it's like, come on, guys. Look at those ridiculous stone walls. Well, you can see the chicken wire.
Just the funny thing is about the Star, because this is all the first season of Star Trek.
Yeah.
The first episode of Star Trek, right? Like the first
original series. Yeah.
Thank you. The first series of Star Trek. Well, remember that we saw them on tiny little screens in black and white.
You didn't see any of those details.
It's only now where we most of us are seeing them in color and they're on bigger screens and the rest of it looks absurd.
Like, oh, this does not look as good as I remember it looking.
Years
ago. Yeah, no. On a 13-inch black and white television, Star Trek looked incredible.
Okay. By the way, I just finished watching a documentary, so you guys should all go look it up.
Okay.
Everybody, How William Shatner Changed the World.
Okay. Well, you know what we'll say?
It's hilarious. Not only, but it is about, it is just about how Star Trek inspired different people.
Huge numbers of people to get into sciences, to look different ways of technology. Yeah, no, it's fascinating stuff.
So you can go watch that. It's an hour and a half.
But speaking of scientists and inspiration, on what planet does a woman running a tech company give an award to at a senior level high school science fair for something about sundials?
About Stonehenge.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a science fair having a sundial themed. How is that winning a science fair? It was
how the hell? Yeah, and how the hell did this kid, who was a terrible student,
come up with one? Yeah, a sundial themed thing so good that it beat. Okay, again, I think the guy lost because he was talking about shocking animals, but you know. That's another conversation.
Well, yeah, but maybe. But then again, but the thing is a tech person would have looked at that and said, that is innovative.
And it's got potential, yeah.
And it's got potential. So this kid is going to go to university and do something. This other kid who did Stonehenge.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't
I agree
even
with
a
you.
Good student. And there's no way he was going to get $50,000 to go to a university in Ohio or
it's
Iowa.
It's a ridiculous
God
episode.
Only knows where.
But the point is, they literally they literally just look at what all the people had in common. Scholarships.
She was the CEO to boot.
I know.
She
no,
was
there's
CEO
no excuse.
Of this company.
There's no excuse for her doing it that way. So they look over, they look at the various people who have won and lost, and the last guy got his scholarship on the terrible thing, and he lost to someone who was making shock collars. So it's really not hard to figure out who the killer is at all. But yeah, when you find out what the, like, this whole episode is so overshadowed by that unbelievably stupid sundial thing.
Yeah, I know.
It's so distractingly awful that, like, the whole other episode...
The whole episode just goes, what are you talking about? What are you talking about, Willis?
What? Huh? No, it's insane. It's madness. It was just madness. Like, there's no other word for it. All right. Oh, yes, and then they do the thing where he wants to shock himself, but they turn off the power outside, so he isn't able to shock himself. And that's the happy ending. The guy gets sent to jail. I don't think the world would have been a worse place had they allowed him to, you know, just electrocute himself. But you know what? They're going to do what they're going to do.
Oh, he's such an unhappy person.
Exactly. All right, let's do it.
He's going to hang himself in jail. We'll go to number
probably.
Two.
Yeah.
Unforgettable. Okay. When one of Walker's former colleagues is hospitalized after being injected with a radioactive toxin, the BA who suspects the incident is connected to the deaths of several government employees.
Ooh.
And then, meanwhile,
Reed's mother comes to visit him.
Reed receives an unexpected visit in the form of his mother and a ghost from his past.
It is interesting that there are no consequences for him, you know, poisoning everybody. None of the other gangs seem particularly upset about the fact that he poisoned everybody. And they don't give us a firm, and it's very disappointing this week that in the previous episode and this episode, that we don't even find if he killed anybody. Like, when I saw everybody being carted off in hospital, on hospital beds and stretchers, bleeding out of their noses, I'm like, oh my god, did Reed just kill a bunch of people?
But we don't know.
All we know is the guy he was working with repackaging the drugs is in the hot. We see him in the infirmary, but we don't know what his condition is. And
okay,
I'm like,
and here's my big question.
Please.
So he says to Reed, they made me taste it.
Test it, yes.
Test it, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm going, okay, these guys are running this drug business.
Yep.
They make this guy test it. He tests it, and he just crashes.
Yeah.
And they're going to hand the rest of these drugs out?
Apparently. Well, maybe Reed cut it with ammonia in such a way that it doesn't, and I'd say make you that it doesn't kick in for like 45 minutes.
Well, that's not what it looked like.
It's certainly not what it looks like, but more importantly, even if it took 45 minutes, let's pretend it did, there's no way you've distributed all of your drugs just in the 45 minutes between the guy testing it. Right? And the next scene. Like, there's no chance for all of these people to be taking the drugs at once. Like, it takes you days to get all of the drugs to all of the people who want them. So
yeah,
the idea that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is because the reason I think it must act pretty quickly is because in the montage, it's like, I think you see them taking it and then, you know, getting sick and bleeding and everything
exactly.
else. But it's such a fast, stupid montage. And I didn't
that
really
it,
want
it
to go
gives
back
you the, Oh, no. It gives you the implication that it's happening relatively quickly. Yeah. Also, and I mean, just from a scientific state, I've never snorted, you know, pure crystallized bleach. But I feel like you would notice right away that you had snorted pure crystallized bleach. I think the body would not react well to that.
No. Well, of course, no, but Donald Trump seems to think so.
Well, okay, that's a whole other comment.
You know, so maybe the person that wrote this episode also thinks, you know.
Well, there is a large compliment about people out there on the internet trying to get you to use bleach to cure yourself, but they're certainly not telling you to grind it into meth and snort it. That is definitely another take.
As I said, these two episodes were
pretty bad. Yeah, they're pretty bad.
So bad.
But yeah, that's what had me so confused about the Reed storyline, because there are no consequences for him. None of the gangs make a move on him after he tried to kill all of them.
Yeah.
And by the way, and this is yet another episode that makes me wonder, isn't it strange that it's like they seem like they're setting something up with the idea that someone is keeping him from being moved into protective custody? Like, we are all but, like, they keep saying someone is putting a hold on his move, someone is blocking him from being put into protective custody, and that will never pay off. And in the last episode, we're expected to believe that a single prison guard can
could
keep an FBI agent. of a single prison guard who doesn't even work at that prison full time could be kept, like, could be keeping a man from being put into protective custody.
With the kind of high-powered legal...
Yeah, help he has.
Has. And with the BAU and yeah. Emily Prentice, who's
with the FBI looking out for him, with the high-priced lawyer, all of that. No, one single jerk prison guard can keep this man out of protective custody. Nope.
But that's next week.
That's next week. But I'm just saying, I mention it here because we keep having these references to the mystery of why he can't get into protective custody. And I just want to remind everybody that there's no satisfying payoff to that mystery. There's a completely unsatisfying payoff.
What, Lindsay Vonn and Kat Adams?
Yeah.
I have somehow such sway with the prison system.
I know.
They could keep him in.
They've got one guard working for him.
Gen Pop?
I know. It's
oh,
madness.
My Lord. I mean, season is. Well, I'm not going to say we have to go through 13 and 14 again. And as we all know, my memory is I have obviously never put any of these memories into my
long term.
Right. And I watch them and then write them off. But this is the worst season for sure to date.
Oh, I know. Today and it is. It's really bad. Date.
Now, 13 and 14. I mean, 15
just
was
wait
better.
Until you get to 13. Yeah, oh, my God. It's going to blow your mind.
Yeah, well, Erica.
And the thing is, I knew someone, and this is we'll talk about it when we get to that episode, but I knew someone who, you know, religiously watched the show and, you know, thought of it as a bad show, but just, like, enjoyed it from time to time. And it's, like, got to season 13, and she was like, nope. It's just, this is too dumb. I'm never watching this show again.
Oh, well, that one's going to be fun to talk about, though.
That's a very fun episode to talk about.
I mean, it's a fun episode.
So stupid.
I'm like, I mean, it's stupid, but at least it's a fun episode.
That's
these
true,
ones,
yes. Are just
these
slogs.
Aren't even, are just, this isn't, I mean, first of all, True North is just insane.
Yeah.
And then.
And this one is like a woman who has what can be best described as the worst murder plan in the history of murder plans. So I just want to express, here is what the plan of this killer is. Make it look like the method generally used by Russian assassins, injecting people with radioactive isotopes so they die of organ failure, is being done to American government people. And so she does this by walking up behind people and stabbing them with a tiny bit of radioactive material that gets jammed into their abdomen and it kills them. Right?
Oh, in their backs, yeah.
And so, yeah, and somewhere in their back. Yeah, they're somewhere in their torso on the back, right? And so that's her plan. And this is where it gets problematic. Her plan is to do this, right? Even though, I'm already laughing. Because she wants to murder her husband for the insurance. And maybe other reasons, we don't know anything about their marriage. But, and here's the problem and how they figure it out. She's going to make it look like a terrorist or a Russian something is sneaking up behind people and stabbing in the back. But she's going to kill her husband by just putting the radioactive isotopes in his food. But then people will immediately know. Like, the people in the government aren't idiots. They're going to know that if somebody, the difference between someone eating poison and someone getting stabbed with poison. And so they like, oh, so this guy ate a bunch of food. That's weird. So it had to be someone who could get into his food. What does his wife do for a living? Works with radioactive materials at hospitals? Okay, done.
Done!
Like, she... Her whole plan is to make the most anonymous possible crime, and then, when it's time to murder her husband, kill him in a way that implicates her and could not conceivably implicate anyone else, because no one else had access to his food. What was she thinking? Oh, right, she was thinking that the cops needed to be able to solve the crime this week, and the writers couldn't think of any other way. But yeah, like, this episode is crazy for that reason, because this woman comes up with the worst plan. So if you just ignore her unbelievably stupid plan, we can focus on what the episode wants us to focus on, the DOA stuff with Steven's friend, which is very sad.
It is very sad. It also makes me wonder.
Yeah.
Right? Whether or not, like, you don't get any impression when you're watching this episode, because this is like Walker's backstory.
Yes.
Okay. Have you watched the latest Blacklist?
No, I have not.
Last night's Blacklist.
Well, I have not watched.
It'll be
the
interesting.
Blacklist.
We finally get a backstory for Mr. Wright. You know, the blonde-haired guy.
Yeah.
It's the whole episode. In fact, Reddington doesn't even show up.
Well, that's disappointing, but...
No, it's okay. No.
It's entirely about that character. I understand.
Yeah, just about that character. And then the ending is just when What's-Her-Face calls, she says, "Have you not noticed my FEMA of a life?" Have you not noticed?
Okay, that's pretty funny.
Anyway, never mind. And that doesn't
support
anything. The point about that is you're looking at this. Okay, and this is Walker's episode.
Yeah, it's basically entirely devoted to him, Walker, to building him up as a character, establishing him as a character. That's what this episode is for.
And how his wife doesn't want him to, would be just as happy if he stays with the BAU, even though it's more difficult because he's around more.
Yeah.
Which tells you something, right?
And we talk about how, and we're given the implication that, like, when both of them wanted to leave Russia, that guy stayed so Steven could go home. And that's why that guy's marriage broke up and his didn't. Like, they, I mean, it is clear from this episode that they had every intention of keeping Steven around.
Yeah. Now, which goes to your theory, which we will not repeat on air.
We are not repeating that on air.
He got fired and the other guy. Gets
brought in. The only thing we'll say is it is 100% clear that they enjoyed working with Daniel Henney to the point that this guy, who clearly they had planned to keep, got abruptly fired so they could bring Daniel Henney onto the show, which is kind of, and I mean, it's, we'll talk about it in season 13 more, because he is an identical character to Luke. Yeah. There is nothing Daniel Henney brings to the show.
No,
that
nothing.
Luke wasn't already doing, other than having a lot of adorable children.
Yes, that's exactly it. I mean, this episode was really great, giving us a backstory for Walker.
Yeah, and it shows you that he could have been an interesting character going forward.
Yeah, and really, because he was, that's, maybe that was part of the problem. But I really wonder when they heard, because this is airing April 26th, but when did they hear?
Oh, they didn't know until the end. I'm sure they didn't know until the end of the year.
That when it was did being they canceled. Hear that Beyond Borders was being canceled?
Oh, I don't think it was till after all these episodes were shot. That is my suspicion. I mean, obviously, I can't say for sure.
Yeah.
But that is my suspicion. But fundamentally,
anyway, but
it's the stuff, his backstory and the stuff with his friend is, it's all good stuff. It's just the actual murder plot is so dumb this week.
Yeah. And all it had to be is that she, because she had been planning this for 10 years.
Yeah.
So why didn't she just kind of do it every now and then?
Yeah. Over a larger period of time.
Over a longer period of time. And then what do you mean? Well, he would have recognized her. Well, nobody else seemed to turn around.
Nobody even knew it was a woman.
Nobody even knew, like, what's his best friend didn't even notice that he'd gotten
been stabbed. He just thought he had a heart attack.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, the idea that she couldn't also walk up to her husband and do the same thing by stabbing him in the back. Of course she could have.
Yeah.
But no, they just needed them to be able to solve it easily. So,
yeah, they wouldn't have caught her then.
Yeah,
because
exactly. She
would have done a couple more afterwards.
Exactly.
And then nobody would have ever figured out, and she could have gotten her millions and been a grieving widow.
Oh, well, one problem with the episode is, and this is, okay, one problem. There's a bunch of problems with the episode. But I will mention something else about the episode that they got, that they went all khaki wampus with. Right. And this is I know it's a slightly strange part about the thing to call out, but they say maybe it's someone like the Anthrax Palmer who wanted to who wanted to spread anthrax throughout the federal government so they could cash in on having a cure for anthrax they were trying to sell. And I'm like, yeah, they never caught the anthrax bomber. What you're describing is what the BAU now says, because they've pretty much determined they believe this one guy did it, right? And this is what they think his motive is. But that guy's dead, and they never proved anything.
Yeah. Well,
so it's just so weird for them to casually say that we know who the anthrax bomber is, and we know who what his motive
well,
was.
Well, you know what I think about the anthrax thing that keeps coming up? This must be a really something of
sensitive subject with the actual FBI. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's Jim Clemente's sort of thing. Bugaboo. That he has to, yes. Bugaboo. Because it keeps coming up. How
over
many times
and over again.
Does yep. this thing come up? For heaven's sakes, Aaron and Jeannie Triplehorn, you know.
Had the exact same thing.
It's the anthrax thing.
And that's why Mark Hamill was killing people over yeah. the anthrax case. Like, and let's not forget, they did an entire episode that was like Jim Clemente's real life fan fiction about how they were right to persecute that guy. And he really was the anthrax bomber, even though we were never able to prove it, the time that Reed friggin' poisons himself by being an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
yeah.
made it the episode that convinced us that he was suicidal.
Yeah. He was passively suicidal.
Suicidal. Exactly. That right. And that's also like, it's all, I think behind the scenes in the show, Jim Clemente just has this axe to grind that he will never let go. And while it's not as offensive as the axe he has to grind over the Olympic Park bombing, right? And it's like how they were right to persecute. Oh my God, how am I blanking on his name? We just watched a movie about him.
You mean Clint Eastwood's Richard Jewell.
Richard Jewell, yeah. Like, it's not as offensive as the episode that was entirely about how they were right to, like, well, what if we'd been right to persecute Richard Jewell? Yeah, what if? But you weren't, Jim. You weren't right to persecute Richard Jewell. And you writing a fantasy where you were right doesn't make it better. In the same way, they're doing the exact same thing over and over again about the anthrax bombing. Like, they try to create these situations where they were right to trash this guy's life.
Yeah.
Because they trashed his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, didn't he kill himself later? Or did he just die of a heart attack from the stress? I don't remember if he killed himself or if he died of a heart attack from the stress,
which,
like Richard Jewell did.
The other guy, I thought he committed suicide. But
he might have committed suicide, he might not. But the point is, the fact that they are specifically not just making an accusation, right, or implying or saying what we thought the motive was. The fact that they're having them say, this is who it was, this is what his motive was. That really rubbed me the wrong way. You know, like having this claim of 100% we were right about the anthrax case. Well, then why didn't you solve it?
Yeah.
Really bothered me. But yeah, like it's not, this isn't a dire episode. Like all the Steven stuff is really fun.
Yeah, no, the Steven stuff is really good. The backstory, and it's touching.
Yeah.
And the poor
the scene
guy.
With him, them rushing the son to see him, like that one episode of 24 with Xander yeah. Berkeley, where George Mason gets poisoned in season with radiation in season two, and then like his estranged son has to come and see him. Like it's all really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it absolutely is, right? And that you really feel the drama, like you get it. They get to the night payoff. And you get Steven seeing his friend getting killed and like realizing how precarious life is and how that could have been him if he had kept doing the job that he gave up to come back to his wife. Like it's yeah. good stuff.
Yeah. It's all really good stuff. And gave
but
him
it's
a...
in, but it's in the episode. It's all within an episode that is just super dumb. Otherwise,
yeah.
It's frustrating, right? Now, yeah. Can we talk about Gia Montagna's character?
We can talk about either Lindsay Vonn or we can talk about Reed's mother, who God knows she's supposed to have Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I am just sort of sitting there like they either nobody in this entire show has had anybody in their life who has had Alzheimer's.
That's possible.
Okay. So, and they have, and of course they do their research on weird websites clearly, as we figured out a few episodes ago.
Oh, yeah.
So they clearly do that. They don't do any in-depth. This is not, like, you cannot believe, well, I've come to terms with the fact that I have Alzheimer's. No, honey.
Nope.
You wouldn't be able to at this point if you were that bad.
Yep.
And the fact that somehow or another, she doesn't know she's in a prison. How the hell does she not know she's in a friggin' prison? She has, do you know what
the
she
number
had to
of
do?
Steps you have to go through to visit someone in a maximum
security prison?
Yeah, because remember, he's not being held in the county lockup.
No!
Awaiting trial. He's in maximum security prison.
And she that's doesn't know this, that this is a prison?
It's like, I mean, is this Memento? Does her brain reset every 3 minutes?
Yes. It's like, yeah, that'll be it. It's Memento, right? This is their homage to Memento.
So mean, but that's the only explanation I could
come up
with.
Well, it's just like, I'm sitting there and then she gets mad and then she bangs on the door. She doesn't want to get locked in. And then he talked to her. And then there are so many stupid, I really have a tough time watching Reed and his mother.
I know.
I really do. Right. And then Lindsay Vonn comes in.
Yep. And we do our little flashback.
Yeah. Which was, we did that whole episode about.
We talked, we were very strong about our opposition to, Reed's opinion about that whole thing. Well, and just for the record, we were 100% fine with that guy getting shot, getting his head blown off. And we were confident that there's no reason it should screw her up. But the show is like, no, we have a different morality. And the show's morality is if the team wants to kill someone, that's fine.
Yeah.
If anybody else wants to justifiably kill someone, no. It's going to destroy their lives and turn them into mass murderers.
Yeah. And it was this insanity. Like, well, I mean, we'll have to talk more about it next.
Well, we're going to talk more about it when she's a character next week.
Yeah. But I mean, I thought it was, you know, I mean, I would think that watching it for the first time.
Yeah.
Right. If I try to remember back to it. Right. Like what, when you watch it for this first time.
Yeah, of course.
It is rather a surprise. And it's, you know, but then you do say, well, how the hell did she end up wanting to do this? Why would she want to do this to Reed? I mean, that would be the question at the end of this episode. If you didn't know what goes on forward, right? What's
yeah,
going
like,
forward.
Why on earth is she doing
why
this
on earth
to Reed?
Would she do this to Reed? Because her father clearly got away with it because Reed is so stupid. I mean, that was the big takeaway I took from that episode is Reed, do you not know how at all how the world works? Well, no, of course you don't. Look at what he did in prison. Everything that he said in that episode with Lindsay Vonn and her father is exactly what he's doing in prison. And we're now 8-10 years later.
It's almost 10 years later.
Almost 10 years later, and he hasn't learned a damn thing.
Nope.
Not a damn thing about how the world works.
It's kind of amazing, really.
Yeah, yeah.
His dedication to ignorance about human behavior when he's a profiler.
Yeah. Oh, that's the one thing. Was it? Oh, the cognitive interview. Oh, I want to make one little.
Oh, please go back to the cognitive interview.
Pissy thing. When Prentice says, PhD, medical doctor, you know. Oh, who cares?
He's your patient today. Wink.
And
that kind of pissed me off.
I sat there and I thought, no, there is a freaking big difference. And
also,
go pretend you're a medical doctor. No.
Not only is there a big difference between a medical doctor and a psychologist, but she is a psychologist. She is allowed to have patients. She is allowed to treat patients as a psychologist.
In prison.
Yeah.
Because she has got a long history. You mean nobody in the prison system doesn't wouldn't it be know. Great if
it's kind of the implication that, wait, has Tara just been pretending to be a medical doctor this whole time in prison? No, but it's like the show seems to think that psychology isn't a valid field of study and prisons wouldn't take psychology seriously. And I'm like, do you not know the premise of the show you're making?
Do you not know the premise of the show you are making? Have you forgotten that
this is
it's Criminal Minds, and when she joined the show, she was going into high security, high security
to interview serial killers.
And she has a reputation in the prison system
for doing that. I agree. Like, the fact that this show, of all shows, that this show decides to do this weird drive-by attacking psychologists is so bizarre.
Well, as I said, you know, I mean, it goes to two things, but the main thing, okay, so I tell you, there must be people in Scientology here. You know, I mean, just to
no,
throw
it is,
that
yeah, it's such a weird drive-by that, you know, it makes me more likely to believe your conspiracy theory.
You know, Scientology. You know, it was just like a weird drive-by, and I'm just, no. But anyway, I had forgotten
no,
that.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I completely forgot that line until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought it up, because it's such a strange thing to say in the world of this show. Yeah. To just, like, passing and saying, no, of course prisons won't take you seriously if you're just a psychologist. You know, give them a little wink and pretend, you know, just say you're Dr. So-and-so and trick your way. And no, she's a well thought of friggin' psychologist who works with the worst criminals in the world. It's so bizarre. Sorry. I will let you finish coughing. I apologize. Should not have interrupted that. Seriously, though, like, no, that is such a strange line. I mean, it's not as bad as the, you know, them trying to once again claim credit for a crime the FBI never actually solved. But it is a bizarre thing to hear from this show of all shows.
Given what they do for a living.
It's called Criminal Minds.
And as I said, with these kinds of things, it is still clear that they do not have a character Bible.
Oh, yeah. No. They've got nobody worrying about consistency from second to second on the show.
No,
there is no continuity person. There is no one doing research. None of that.
And does it show?
Oh, it shows.
It was
all right.
What I wrote back one of our people who emailed us, right?
Yeah.
And I wrote her back and I said, I said you're probably by now figuring out just how frustrated I am with this show. And what I said too is it did have promise. Those first couple of years, it did have promise.
Mm-hmm.
And even into year three, you know, when Ed Bernera still had some pretty tight reins. But I don't know what I've got my own theories, too, that we'll not repeat on this show.
Nope.
But
we're not looking to get sued by talking about our behind the scenes theories.
We sit and talk about some of our theories, you know, and go, well, how can we ever find out if that's the case? Well, there's no way we would ever.
Well, no, some people might in 10 years, a couple of people might write some tell all autobiographies.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be nice. It would be very nice.
Yes.
Seriously, though, yeah, like, it's going to be hard for us to... It's not like we can befriend Simon Mirren and get the gossip from behind
us. Come on, Simon, we want the gossip.
We need the hot gossip from behind the scenes.
Come on,
Ed. We won't tell anyone that you're the one who told us, Simon Mirren.
Or Ed Bernero. I mean,
Ed Bernero. I don't mind that he, you know, once tried to do a terrible Punisher TV show. That's the job he tried to get going right after, you know, he left, in air quotes, Criminal Minds, and Suspect Behavior didn't go. He tried to develop a Punisher TV show for Fox, and it didn't work out, which made me sad, because it would be nice to keep him working, although probably would have not been a good TV show.
Well,
trying to do Punisher on network television.
It's Fox, too. Remember, even if he had managed to succeed and did what he wanted, it would have been canceled after 13
Right
away.
I mean, you're right. This is the people who canceled The Inside. Great development, terrible programmers.
Okay, come on. The no, inside action.
I know.
They even canceled Briscoe County Jr.
Briscoe County Jr., Firefly. My personal favorite show, Fastlane.
Yeah. I mean, they constantly, anyway.
You know, they don't know what to do. And I mean, Action was, of course, the most tragic example. And that's going to, you know, that's something that we've recommended you watch by now, because you're listening to this in the future.
Yes.
And you've heard our quarantine episodes 5 months ago. So you've already heard us recommend Action, the best satire about Hollywood ever. But that's for another time. For right now, we're going to wrap this up here and say, join us back for, hey, you know how we like to talk about Spencer Reed a lot? you might have noticed that.
How, well, that's in fact, I think it's new next week.
Next week is going to be, I don't know how long the episode's going to be. I would not be surprised if it was an hour and a half. I would not be surprised if it was 2 hours. We're only talking about two episodes, but it is in many ways like the definitive thing for Spencer Reed in the entire series.
Well, what
so,
we're going to call, what we'll call, whatever number that one is, by now it's hundreds. Whatever it is, right, we're going to have to just call it the Spencer Reed special.
Unless we actually do a Spencer light. Reed special later
green
on.
Green light, red light, the Spencer
Reed special.
Yeah. Number one.
No, it's fascinating because there's going to be a lot of Spencer Reed next week, a lot about the myths he creates about himself, a lot about how he treats other people, about how other people treat him, about what the show wants you to think the character is, and about what he really is.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to look at next week, including, I'm finally going to say, how the show could have saved itself and could have made Spencer Reed's arc the most interesting thing on television. So it should be a fun week next week. I think you're going to have a good time next Thursday. But until then, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you have any suggestions for profiling related fiction you'd like us to check out, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you were listening to this on some sort of an app or podcatcher, be sure to give it a rating, because that is how people find the show. And we'll see you back here next Thursday for the grand finale of season 12. But until then, I'm going to say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.